turn to Psalm 46. And once again, we'll read the entire psalm, 11 verses. God is our refuge and strength, very present help in trouble. Therefore, will not we fear, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord. What desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Again, this is a psalm that is all about God. God is the emphasis of the psalm. The emphasis is not the trouble. The emphasis is not what we read in verses 2 and 3. The emphasis is not the heathen. The emphasis is God. We see the name God, the word God, occurs 7 times. The name Lord occurs 3 times. There is the title the Most High God that occurs 1 time. There's the personal pronoun he referring to him 5 times. The personal pronoun I referring to him 3 times. So that's 19 mentions of God. Again, it's all about God. As you look at this psalm, you see how it is arranged. It's not difficult to see that. It consists, again, these are songs, and it consists of 3 stanzas. And each stanza ends with the word Selah. We see that in verse 3. We see it again in verse 7. See it again in verse 11. And again, Selah is a musical pause, but it's also a place for the reader to pause and to simply contemplate whatever it is that has been said. So you have 3 stanzas. Each stanza is all about God. God is the emphasis of each stanza. And then at the end of each one of those stanzas, we are called upon to pause, contemplate what has been said about God. In the first stanza, which would be verses 1 through 3, the emphasis is upon the absoluteness, the stability, and the sufficiency of God. And then you have that word, Selah. That is, think about it. Think about the absoluteness of God. Think about the stability and the sufficiency of God. In the second stanza, verses 4 through 7, God is our resource. God is our comfort. And then again, you have that word, Selah. That is, contemplate that God is our resource. He is everything we need. He's our comfort. Third stanza, verses 8 through 11, you have the idea of the supremacy and the rule of God. You see there in verse 8, there's an invitation. Come, behold the works of the Lord. That's something that we ought to do every day. And then it goes on to speak of the things that God does. So we see God's supremacy, God's rule. He's presented as our deliverance. And then again, you have that word, Selah. Again, God is the emphasis. The psalmist does mention himself. He mentions us with the pronouns our and us. He also mentions the heathen twice. He makes mention of wars, makes mention of the spear, he makes mention of the chariot. But the emphasis is God. God is the theme of the psalm. And because it's all about God, it is a song filled with joy. Now, if the emphasis was upon the earth being removed and the mountains being carried into the sea, if that was the emphasis, this would not be a song of joy or comfort. But that's not the emphasis. The emphasis is God. And therefore, there is joy. There is comfort. There is encouragement. There's a lesson there for you and I. It's very, very important what we put the emphasis upon in any situation in our life. What is it that we put the emphasis upon? And if we put the emphasis upon God, there will be joy, there will be comfort, there will be encouragement. We see because the emphasis is God, it's a song of praise to God. For a child of God, if you emphasize God, if that's where you put the emphasis, you will praise Him. You will worship Him. You will adore Him. You will reverence Him. And we see that spirit all through this psalm. It's a song of faith. Again, the emphasis is God. The emphasis is not the earth being removed or the mountains carried into the sea. The emphasis is God. It's about faith. We see also there are absolutes. God is. God is. There's absolutes. There's confidence. There's assurance in God. A psalm all about God. Therefore, it would be a psalm that would strengthen our faith and strengthen the resolve of every child of God. So the more we realize and the more we are aware of the truth and the reality of God, the happier we'll be and the more useful we will be and the more fruitful we will become. So we need to desperately live in the reality of Psalm 46. We need to daily experience Psalm 46. I mean, do we daily experience God is? Do we daily experience God is our refuge, our strength, our help in trouble? Do we daily experience the Lord of hosts is with us? The God of Jacob is our refuge. That needs to be our daily experience. So as you read this 46th psalm, the psalmist is speaking. He speaks with great conviction. He speaks with great assurance. He speaks wonderful and glorious things of the Lord. And we see that in verses 1 through 9. And as you read that, you can't help but notice there's a very orderly flow to what he is speaking. But then, in verse 10, the flow is interrupted. The flow is interrupted. God is no longer being spoken of. He's speaking. So you read those first 9 verses. The psalmist is talking about God. But then verse 10, be still and know that I am God. Now that's not the psalmist speaking. That's God speaking. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. And then in verse 11, the psalmist resumes speaking. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, which is a repetition of what he said in verse 7. So there's this God interruption. God speaks. And that's really the climax of the psalm. Verse 10 is the climax. It's the crowning point of the psalm. And then God interrupts the psalmist simply to give reminder of himself and to exhort the psalmist in light of who he is. And oh, again, how we need to hear God speaking there in verse 10. What we read in verse 10, again, is the instruction. It is the exhortation. It is the application of the entire psalm. Be still and know that I am God. And I believe when the psalmist resumes speaking there in verse 11, again, we've already said he's repeating what he said in verse 7. But I believe he repeats it with much more passion than he did in verse 7. Simply because God has spoken to him. So we want to speak this evening on God's instruction in the hour of crisis and in the critical times. Because again, that's the setting of the psalm, is a time of crisis. Critical times. But here in verse 10, we have God's instruction during those times. First of all, consider the proclamation here of God. Again, what God says is in light of a storm, in light of danger, in light of need, weakness, frailty, inability, fear, disruption that we read of in verses 2 and 3, change. Everything appears to be falling apart, spinning out of control. The heathen are spewing, it says they roar, they are spewing forth their agitation. The heathen are agitated and they become more and more agitated every single day. So the heathen are spewing forth their agitation, their fury, their wrath, their outrage, their resentment toward God and toward God's people. God is being discredited. God is being dishonored. And in the midst of it all, God says something. He says, I am God. I am God. God here calls us to take notice of himself. I am God. It is the tendency of human nature to be unmindful and oblivious of God. It is the tendency of human nature to ignore God. It is the tendency of human nature to get so busy, so caught up and distracted and entangled with the affairs of life that we become blind and deaf to God. That's our tendency. Yet God, in His mercy and in His goodness, directs our attention to Himself. And that's what the psalmist, or that's what God is doing here with the psalmist. I am God. He's directing his attention, directing his focus. At times we may find ourselves surrounded by the happenings of verses 2 and 3. We may actually find ourselves in a time where it appears that the earth is being removed, or it might as well be, and the mountains are being carried into the sea, and the waters thereof roar and are troubled, and the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. We may find ourselves in the very midst of that situation, the happenings of verses 2 and 3. And it is then that we need to hear God say, I am God, causing us to take notice of Him, causing us to refocus, not to focus upon the earth, not to focus upon the mountains or the sea, but to focus upon God. And that's what God is doing here. Now the psalmist is pretty focused on God. But when God says, I am God, and the psalmist hears that, that has got to change his spirit. So in this 46th psalm, the psalmist has been talking about God. Been saying wonderful things about God. Theologically sound things about God. But here in verse 10, God gets his attention. Now I'm not saying that God didn't have his attention before. Perhaps he did, perhaps he didn't. But after verse 10, he really has his attention. And there's a lesson here. I'm not saying this is what the psalmist was doing, but you and I can talk about God. We can talk of God without him really having our attention. That is a very great possibility. That we can talk all about God. And it can be sound. And what we say can be God-honoring. But really the question is, does God have our attention? Does God have our personal attention? And again, after verse 10, the psalmist repeats what he said in verse 7. But again, I believe with much, much more passion than he did in verse 7. So whoever we are, and whatever our place, whatever our time, whatever our station in life, whatever our circumstances, our attention needs to be upon God. And whatever it takes for God to get our attention. Hopefully that's all it takes, is for God to speak, I am God. And He has our attention. God can get our attention. He can do so in many ways. Secondly, God makes a very explicit declaration concerning Himself. I am God. That's not the psalmist saying that he is God. He's been saying that for 9 verses. But here in verse 10, God says, I am God. Not just the psalmist declaring it. Now, declarations are made about God throughout Scripture. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 35, the Lord, He is God. That's a declaration made about God. There is none else beside Him. Psalmist declared in Psalm 86:10, Brother Mark read this morning, Thou art God alone. That's the psalmist declaring God. Psalm 90, verse 2. The psalmist again says, Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. Thou art God. So we can declare that he is God. But here in our text, God declares, I am God. And in Isaiah 46, verse 9, God says, I am God, and there is none else, and there is none like me. Now we ought to declare that God is God. But know this, there is quite a difference between you and I speaking of Him as God, declaring that He is God, and Him announcing and proclaiming, I am God. Big difference. When God declares, I am God, it's an all-inclusive statement. There's nothing that's not included in that statement. I am God. Those are blessed words to the child of God. Sometimes, God may whisper in our ear, I am God. I am God. That's a wonderful time. God can interrupt whatever's going on in our life and just whisper those words. Sometimes God may declare that truth, the reverberating voice, I am God. But whether it be a whisper, or whether it be a loud proclamation, we need to hear those words. We need to hear them in such a way that immediately our hearts are stirred. When God whispers in our ear, I am God. Or when God proclaims with a loud voice, I am God. That ought to stir our hearts. That ought to inspire us. There are no words more significant and relevant. There are no words more consequential than God saying, I am God. I am God. He is saying, I'm not just some conception of the human mind. I am not what you make me to be by your mode of thinking. I am God. I am God. That statement includes everything that the psalmist has said about him through verses 1 through 9, and more. It includes everything that the psalmist said, and then, of course, much more. I am God. The psalmist is in a crisis. And God says, I am God. We live in crisis. There is a world crisis. There is national crisis. If you haven't figured it out by now, there is political crisis. There is economic crisis. There is moral crisis. And there may be even personal crisis. But no matter how you look at it, it's a critical hour. But in the midst of all that, what a blessing it is to hear God say, I am God. I am God. In the midst of the storm, in the midst of the danger, in the midst of everything going on in Psalm 46, hear God say, I am God. When everything appears to be falling apart, we need to hear Him say, I am God. When everything seems to be spinning out of control, we need to hear Him say again, I am God. Psalmist tells us here that the heathen raged. And when the heathen are spewing forth their agitation, spewing forth their hatred and resentment toward God and His people, how comforting it is to hear God say, I am God. I am God. In a time when the world is being manipulated, under the spell of Hollywood and pop culture and mainstream media and academia, hear God say, I am God. I am God. You see, nothing changes that. Has no effect on who He is. In the midst of all the theories, in the midst of all the philosophies that relegate God to the background and give Him a position of the lowest sort, hear God say, I am God. I am God. When someone dishonors Him and blasphemes Him, we hear Him say, I am God. In a time when modern Christendom's conception of God is a miserable caricature and blasphemy, and God is presented as some helpless being, a creation of emotional sentimentality, an object of pity, hear God say, I am God. I am God. Not only hear Him say it, but know what it means. So whatever our condition, whatever our circumstances, we need to hear the Lord say, I am God. There's rich blessing there. There are unsearchable riches in those words. Those are words that need to grip our hearts. I am God. Sadly, verses 2 and 3, that is what the happenings of verses 2 and 3, the earth being removed, the mountains carried into the sea, the waters of the sea roaring and troubled, the mountains shaking. Many times that's what grips our hearts, what consumes our minds. And we need to hear God say, I am God. Even when the earth is being removed, I am God. The mountains are being carried into the sea, I am God. So God makes a proclamation. He makes a declaration concerning Himself. I am God. He does this to get our attention. There's also a call and a command that goes forth. And it all has its basis in the proclamation, I am God. The command that He gives is be still. Notice verse 10, be still. That's what it says. Be still. Why? Because He's God. Be still. In light of the fact that I am God, be still. Again, the word be is a command to a state of being. It's not just a one-time thing. It's a state of being. Be still. That's the state of being. Still. Still. What does that mean? Well, it conveys the idea of calm confidence. It's like God saying, be calm. Why? I'm God. What else do you need? I'm God. Be calm. Be confident. Because I am God. Be still. The command is to abstain from, to cease, to discontinue our own ways. The reason? I am God. I am God. The command is to be in a state of surrender. Be still. The reason? I am God. In the midst of the constant movement around us. Again, verse 2 and 3. The earth removed. The mountains carried into the midst of the sea. The waters roar and be troubled. The mountains shake with the swelling thereof. And God says, be still. That is not the normal reaction when verses 2 and 3 is going on. Be still. That's not what we're normally going to do. And the vast majority of people are hurrying about. Everybody's in a hurry to satisfy self. And in the midst of all the clamor, we need to hear and obey God. Be still. And again, it's in light of the declaration, I am God. I am God. Be still. That is, take your proper place before God. No matter what is going on in our lives, no matter what the circumstance is, it is wise to simply take our place before God. That's the best place you can be in. Just take your place before God. So He says, be still. And then notice what else He says. And know. So, the knowing is contingent upon the being still. Be still and know, and then the next word is that word that. Be still and know that. The word that is a word that introduces something very specific. Anytime you have the word that, what follows is something specific. Be still and know that I am God. I am God. God is saying, be still and recognize and be aware that I am God. Is that not what knowing is? To know is to recognize. To know is to be aware. So he's saying, know that I am God. That is, recognize and be aware that I am God. To know is to be confident. To be confident. It means to be persuaded. It means to be certain. So God is saying, be confident. Be persuaded. Be absolutely assured that I am God. And again, it's contingent upon be still. Be still and know. And connects. Be still and know. So this is a call to an awareness of who God is. And again, it's important to realize that this knowledge requires us to be still. But it also works the other way. The more we know that He is God, the easier it is for us to be still. The easier it is for us to be calm. Be still and know that I am God. That is a call to faith. That is a call to believe that He is God. And it is this knowledge, it will not leave you detached from God. This knowledge will not make you indifferent toward Him. When we know that He is God, not just up here, but when we truly know that He is God, you won't be detached from Him. And you won't be indifferent toward Him. Know that I am God. Those words need to pierce through everything that is going on. And reach our hearts. Again, it's confidence, it's assurance, it's conviction. It's certainty that He is God. So it's a call of faith. This knowledge has personal impact. When we know that He is God, how can you not rely upon Him? When you know that He is God, I mean, when that reaches our heart, we will rely upon Him, we will depend upon Him, we will lean upon Him. We will seek Him. We will come to Him. We will cleave to Him. We will embrace Him. We will cast all upon Him. We'll draw from Him. And we'll rest in Him when we truly know that He is God. And this knowledge fills us with a God-honoring resolve not to adopt the ways and the philosophies of a world that has gone insane. And not to have our minds clouded with the philosophies and the ways of the world. to know God, we have a resolve to glorify God. So there you are in the happenings of verses 2 and 3. The earth is being removed. The mountains are carried into the sea. Everything is falling apart. Everything is spinning out of control. And you hear that voice, I am God. I am God. Be still and know that I am God. When you see the earth being removed and the mountains being cast into the sea, carried into the sea, don't run around with like a chicken with your head cut off. But be still. And know this. He is God. And in that very hour of crisis, a resolve will come over you that you want to glorify God. You want to honor Him. You want to show Him forth. You want to walk with Him. Anybody who knows God wants to walk with Him. And you want to serve God. And you want to please God. And you want to stand for God. So we hear these words. Know that I am God. Now in order to do this, calm down. Be still. And know that I'm God. And then continue to know that. And the next time a crisis comes, you will be still. And you'll know even more of God. Again, it's a wonderful way to live. And then lastly, there's a promise that God makes. He said, I will be exalted. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. Oh, we need to be reminded of that all the time. The heathen, just like they were in Psalm 46, are roaring. The heathen are angry. And they're getting angrier every day. But hear God say, I will be exalted among the heathen. Why? Because I am God. I am God. We can embrace that promise because it's God who gives the promise. He said, I will be exalted in the earth. Now in verse 2, the earth is being removed. But hear God say, I will be exalted in the earth. When it all seems to be falling apart, I will be exalted. Be still and know that I'm God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. God is saying, be still. Everything's on course. Everything's on course. And I will be exalted. It hasn't been delayed. It's not like it's not going to happen. There hasn't been any change in the plan. I will be exalted. Everything is on course. We need to know that at all times. Everything's on course. It all depends where your emphasis is. It all depends on what you have your eyes upon. So those surrounded by difficulties and trials and battles and struggles, giants and obstacles and barriers and chaos and ruins of what once was. And though our nation and our society and our culture descends further and further and further into the abyss, hear God say, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. There's courage there. There's strength there. Remember, the psalm starts out that God is. He's our strength. He's our refuge. He's a very present help in trouble. And where is it that we find refuge? Where is it that we find our strength? Where is it that we find our help? Is it not in this? I am God. I am God. Know that I am God. There's comfort there. I mean, if you can't find comfort in God, I've got news for you. You're not going to find it anywhere else. We must find comfort in simply this: I am God. That's all I need to know. I don't need to know what He's going to do. All I need to know is that He's God. And there's comfort. There's gladness. So you see, verse 10 really explains the tone of the entire psalm. The psalmist, I don't know, maybe he was just talking about God and it didn't have an impact upon him. I don't think that's the case. But by the time you get to verse 10, that if that was the case, it's no longer. All God had to do was speak. It changes everything. The sheep hear His voice. The sheep hear His voice. God speaks to His people. Does so in many ways. But God speaks to His people. And it is a characteristic of God's people to hear His voice. Someone told me one time, well, God doesn't speak to me. Do you realize what you've just said? That may be so. God doesn't speak to you, but God speaks to His people. And God's people hear Him. God's people have an open ear. And isn't it wonderful when God just whispers, I am God. I am God. We're ready to fall apart, filled with anxiety. And God just comes and whispers, I am God. That's all it takes. And that goes all the way down into our heart. And it has an impact upon us. We live in an hour of crisis on many, many, many different levels. But if there's one thing that God's people need to know, is this: He is God. He is God. He's in control. We can say in a flippant way, we can say without even believing, well, God's got everything in control. Yes, He does. But do you really, truly know that? Or is it just a platitude? Do we truly know that He's in control? Well, God knows all about it. Yes, He does. But do you know that? But do you know that? God help us. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.